You're listening to ESL Podcast English Cafe, episode 415. This is English as a Second Language Podcast, English Cafe, episode 415. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff McQuillan, coming to you from the Center for Educational Development in beautiful Los Angeles, California. Our website is ESLPOD.com. Go there, become a member of ESL Podcast, and download a learning guide for this episode. On this cafe, we will continue our series on American presidents. Today we're going to talk about our sixth president, John Quincy Adams. And as always, I'll answer a few of your questions. Let's get started. There are many examples in recent years of political families in the United States, families from which several important political leaders have come. The most famous of these families is probably the Kennedys. The Kennedy family has produced a president, John F. Kennedy, as well as several other famous American politicians, and they continue to have members of their family active in politics in some U.S. states. There have been other well-known political families, the Bush family, for example. We now also have the Clinton family, where both the husband and the wife have become important political leaders in the U.S. This phenomenon, this situation of having a powerful political family is, of course, nothing new in most countries. You will see this situation. It's also not new in American history. Today we talk about the first son of a president who himself became president. We're going to talk about John Quincy Adams, who, as our sixth president, served from 1825 to 1829. Normally, we use his middle name, Quincy, in order to distinguish him or to identify him in our minds from his father, who was our second president, John Adams. In this episode, however, I'm just going to refer to him as Adams. So when you hear me say Adams, you will know that I'm talking about John Quincy Adams, not his father, John Adams. Adams was born in 1767, before the American Revolution. As a child, he spent a lot of time traveling internationally with his father. He learned to speak French and some Dutch. He studied at the best college in the United States, both then and now, Harvard, and he began working as an attorney, as a lawyer, in Boston in 1791. The President of the United States at that time, George Washington, our first president, appointed or selected Adams as the minister or the representative to the Netherlands. He did that in 1793 when Quincy was only 26 years old. They used the word minister M-I-N-I-S-T-E-R, to describe this position. Normally, a minister is a religious leader of a Christian church, but here it meant more like an ambassador, someone who represents a country in another country. Adams performed very well in his job. He was later appointed minister to Portugal. In fact, George Washington called him one of the most valuable of American officials abroad. To be valuable means to be someone who is important, someone who benefited the country in some way. In 1802, Adams was elected to the Massachusetts State Senate. Massachusetts is a state, one of our original 13 states, located in the East Coast, in the northeast part of the United States. Adams was elected to the Senate of the state. Later that same year, 1802, he tried to become a member of the United States House of Representatives. Remember, the U.S. national government, like most of our state governments, has two types of representatives. It has senators and it has representatives. There are usually fewer senators than there are representatives. In the United States national government, we have two senators from each state for a total of 100 senators. In the House of Representatives, there are a total of 435 representatives. However, the number that come from each state depends on the population of that state. Adams tried to get elected unsuccessfully, as it turned out, to the U.S. House of Representatives. However, in the next year, 1803, he was elected to the U.S. Senate. He was elected to serve from 1803 until 1808. As a senator, Adams was a member of the Federalist Party. The Federalist Party at that time was one of the two major political parties in American politics. However, Adams took some positions. He had some ideas that did not make him very popular with some members of the Federalist Party. When this happened, he decided, as some politicians do, to change parties, to go over to the other important political group, and that was the Democrat-Republican. That's what it was called, the Democrat-Republican Party. Adams continued to serve as a minister or representative to several other countries. And finally, under President James Monroe, he became the Secretary of State. The Secretary of State in the U.S. government is the most important member of the government when it comes to foreign affairs. The Secretary of State is the person who meets with often presidents or other leaders of other countries. So the foreign policy, the policy of the U.S. government toward other countries, is in part directed and determined by the Secretary of State, of course, working with the president. Adams served or worked as Secretary of State from 1817 to 1825. During that time, he negotiated several important treaties for the United States. A treaty, T-R-E-A-T-Y, is an important agreement, usually between two countries, where each country promises to do something. We often talk about peace treaties that end a war or end armed violence or conflict between two countries. Adams negotiated, among other things, the Adams-Onis Treaty, which made Florida part of the United States. He also helped negotiate the Treaty of 1818, which clarified the boundaries between the United States and Great Britain, or the United Kingdom. To clarify here means to define, to make clear. The most important document that Adams wrote as Secretary of State was something that was later called the Monroe Doctrine. The word doctrine, D-O-C-T-R-I-N-E, is usually associated with a religious belief or an official belief of a religious organization, such as a church. However, here it simply means policy, the policy of the U.S. government, how the U.S. government is going to react in certain situations. The treaty, the Monroe Doctrine, was an attempt to limit the influence of European powers, European countries, in North and South America. It said that if other countries tried to colonize or make as part of their own parts of North and South America, the United States would consider this an act of aggression. When we talk about people being aggressive, A-G-G-R-E-S-S-I-V-E, we mean they are very forceful, very direct in what they are trying to do. Often it is associated with violence. An act of aggression would describe the situation where one country tries to do something to another country against that other country's will. Again, normally the idea is by force, by violence. Many historians believe that Adams was one of the best secretaries of state and one of its best diplomats. A diplomat, D-I-P-L-O-M-A-T, is someone whose job it is to represent their country in another country, usually involving things like treaties and negotiations, discussions with other countries. Adams was himself elected to the presidency in 1824. This was quite a surprise because he, in fact, did not win the most popular votes or the most electoral votes. In the United States presidential election system, the people of each state vote. This vote is called the popular vote. However, people aren't voting directly for the president and vice president. Instead, they are voting to see how the electoral votes of their state will be distributed. The electoral, E-L-E-C-T-O-R-A-L, votes are the actual votes that count for the presidency. So you're sort of voting for a vote. You're voting to determine how your state's electoral votes will be used. What happens is, after the popular election in November, a group of people get together in Washington from each of the 50 states nowadays, and they have another election, if you will. It's called the Electoral College. And this is a group of people who get together and officially determine who is the president or the next president of the United States. Well, in the election of 1824, John Quincy Adams did not receive the most popular votes or the most electoral votes. However, none of the candidates had a majority of the votes. And when this happens, when there is not one candidate who has a majority of the electoral votes, the presidency is decided by a vote in the House of Representatives. This is exactly what happened. It's the only time it has happened in U.S. history. John Quincy Adams was selected as the next president. Many people didn't like the decision, however, and that's one reason why Adams was what we would call a one-term president. He only served for 4 years and was not reelected in 1828. What did Adams accomplish during his 4 years as president? For one thing, he was able to reduce the national debt of the United States. A debt, D-E-B-T, is money that you owe someone else or some other country. The national debt would be the debt that the U.S. national government has. Adams was able to reduce the national debt. However, many of his proposals, many of his ideas were rejected by others. And the truth is he wasn't able to accomplish or do very much during his 4 years as president. But after Adams returned to private life, we might call it, in 1829, he decided that he would continue in politics. We might say that he wasn't yet ready to leave the limelight. To be in the limelight, L-I-M-E-L-I-G-H-T, means to have a lot of attention paid to you, to be the person that everyone is talking about, that everyone is interested in. Adams was not ready to leave the limelight, so he ran for the U.S. House of Representatives again in 1830. This time he won. He became the first U.S. president to go back into Congress, to go back into the legislative branch after having been president. He stayed in the U.S. House of Representatives for the rest of his life, and another 17 years. It was his time in the U.S. House of Representatives when Adams had his most important influence, in some ways, on American policy. Beginning in 1841, Adams focused his attention on the slavery issue. Slavery, S-L-A-V-E-R-Y, is when one person owns another person as property. Adams was in favor of the abolition of slavery. Abolition, A-B-O-L-I-T-I-O-N, is when you end something, when you end some policy. In this case, Adams wanted to end slavery. Unfortunately, the U.S. government didn't want to talk about this issue, especially in the Congress. There was, in fact, what is called a gag, G-A-G, rule. A gag rule is a rule that a representative body or some organization has that says you can't talk about this in a meeting or in an official session. The U.S. House of Representatives had a gag rule about slavery. They weren't even going to talk about it. Adams proposed some laws that would try to end slavery in the U.S. He wasn't successful, but he was successful in drawing people's attention to this issue. There was a movie not too long ago called Amistad, A-M-I-S-T-A-D, which is the Spanish word for friendship. The story is actually about a group of slaves who had been trying to return to Africa after having been sent to Cuba. Eventually, the U.S. government had captured this ship. John Quincy Adams was the lawyer who defended these slaves and eventually won their freedom. It was a very important political case. And an example of Adams fighting for the abolition of slavery as best he could. If you have an opportunity to see this movie, Amistad, I think you'll really enjoy it and certainly learn a lot about John Quincy Adams and what kind of man he was. Adams passed away or died on February 23rd, 1848, when he was 80 years old. He actually died after having gotten sick while giving a speech in the U.S. House of Representatives. He's remembered mostly for his diplomatic skills, especially in his contributions to the Monroe Doctrine. Adams loved to write and, in fact, kept a very detailed diary. A diary, D-I-A-R-Y, is when you sit down every day or frequently and you write about your life that day, what happened that day. Adams kept a diary beginning at age 11 up until the end of his life. This diary consists of more than 50 books and is one of the sources that historians look at in trying to understand life and politics during the early 19th century in the United States. John Quincy Adams then was more than just the son of a president. He was someone who made significant contributions to American politics, contributions such as the Monroe Doctrine, which still have an impact on American policy today. Now let's answer some of the questions you have sent to us. Our first question comes from Norbert, N-O-R-B-E-R-T, currently living in Germany, originally from Poland. Norbert wants to know the difference between base, B-A-S-E, and basis, B-A-S-I-S. Both base and basis can refer to the support that something has or what something stands on, what it is built on. If we're talking about a physical object such as a table, we would use the word base. This table has a wooden base. That means that the table sits on something made of wood. The base is the support. In this case, really, it's usually always on the bottom of the object. Basis means something that is supported, but usually it's not something physical. We're talking more about an argument, for example, or the reasons why you are doing something. The basis for my decision is the information I read yesterday in a book. In both of these cases, we're using base and basis as nouns. Base can also be used as a verb. And when it's used as a verb, then it gets a little more complicated because it can mean something very similar to basis as a noun. For example, you can say, I am going to base my decision on what I read yesterday in a book. When I use base there as a verb, it has a similar meaning as the word basis as a noun, the foundation or the reason why I'm going to do something. So, to sum up, base as a noun is the physical support for some object. Basis as a noun refers to the reasoning or evidence for an argument or some decision or perhaps even some estimate that you are making. Base as a verb can also refer to the reasoning or evidence for a certain decision. Our next question comes from ISA, I-S-A, in Canada. The question has to do with the phrase so far and a related phrase, so far, so good. so far, used by itself, means up to this time, up to the present time. For example, I've been watching this movie for 1 hour, and so far it's pretty good. That would mean up to this point, up to this 1 hour point, it is pretty good. I'm not sure how it's going to be during the next hour, but so far it's been pretty good. The expression so far so good is usually used by itself to describe a certain situation when you're talking about the progress that has been made up to a certain point of time. You might use this expression. For example, someone says, how is your new job? You can say, well, so far, so good. That means up to this point, everything has been going well. So far, so good. We would never say so far, so well, however. You would just use this phrase as it is, so far, so good. This phrase is often used to answer a question about something that is going on that hasn't finished, that hasn't been completed, but the person is asking you how things are going up to this point. How is your new secretary working out? Is she doing a good job? You could say, well, so far, so good. Yes, up to this point, she has done a good job. Finally, Shahin, Shahin, in Iran, wants to know the meaning of the word integral, integral. Integral usually means essential, something that is necessary for something else to be considered complete or whole. For example, having enough money is integral to the success of a new business. If you don't have enough money, you won't be successful. Money is integral to the success of the business. You could also describe a person as being an integral part of a group. Joanne is an integral part of our team at work, our group of people who work together. This word is somewhat formal. You will probably only see it in writing. It often is used in business situations to talk about some necessary element or some necessary or essential component of an operation or a group or some other larger unit that is being discussed. If you have a question or comment, you can email us. Our email address is eslpod@eslpod.com. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Jeff McQuillan. Thank you for listening. Come back and listen to us again right here on The English Cafe. ESL Podcast English Cafe was written and produced by Dr. Jeff McQuillan and Dr. Lucy Singh. This podcast is copyright 2013 by the Center for Educational Development.